Hiring used to be hard. There were multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy, and you only have to go to one place to get it done, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the world's leading job boards, but they don't just stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post in ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. That's LOCKEDON. That's ZipRecruiter.com/lockedon. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning. Joining me for this week's NBA draft, the deep dive, it is Trevor Magnani. Trevor, what's going on, buddy?
Oh, not much. Getting close to the lottery, and this is probably the last one we'll do of these before we actually know the order, so that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's been a long road. I'm very ready for the draft lottery. I have blocked off my Tuesday evening from anything I need to do. Just going to get home, get a good dinner, and, like, just take it in. That night is just going to be so fascinating because I do think, and it's worth talking about, I think, because this will be the last time we do this, and we'll get into our last pre-lottery mock draft. I do firmly believe that this is really going to set the tone for what else is going to come next. I think that's just obvious. I think the pick and the variety of places it could land and what types of guys could be available to the Cavs, it's going to get really interesting. We'll have a clear picture of what is actually realistic instead of us just hitting the tankathon sim button like 100 bajillion times.
Yeah, one team's fortune is going to probably drastically change, and it could be any of a number of different situations, and that's really interesting. And probably equally interesting is that there are some certain rebuilds here that are not going to have their fortunes change very much, and seeing how whatever teams get left behind in the fifth, sixth spots, how they react to things is going to be almost just as interesting as whoever gets moved up or whoever ends up in the top spot.
So in this mock draft that we're going to go through today, the Cavs are the winners of the Zion Williams sweepstakes. If I had, like, really great effects here, I would play, like, a crazy party, and I would set up balloons. Like, I would do whatever I could do to, like, celebrate this. I think this would obviously be an easy pick. The Cavs would, like... I don't know if you remember when they hooting and celebrating. Like, I think it was 2011, I think, when, like, Dan Gilbert brought, like, Machine Gun Kelly to the lottery and they were, like, partying. Like, that is the type of thing I think could happen here. Now, we know Nick Gilbert is going to be repping the team, once again, as he's done in the past. The Cavs obviously have the 14% chance of getting the number one pick. Trevor, let's just get into the basketball stuff of this. The Cavs get number one. They are going to take Zion. I think there's a 0% chance they would do anything else. It would just be like a startling thing if they did something else. What do you make of what Zion Williamson would bring to the Cavs and what they would need to do to perhaps maximize him and what he could be in the league?
Well, I think the biggest thing that probably runs counter to what a lot of people will tell you is if they get Zion Williamson, then Kevin Love rest of his contract in Cleveland. That pairing is just so strong for what Zion needs to have around him. Having a guy who can pop out to the three-point line, is comfortable being an off-ball shooter, but can also handle some creation load, and is particularly very good as a transition passer and half-court passer, is a pretty ideal part. You know, he's a guy that is going to help kind of free up some of the offensive spacing issues that Zion could potentially run into if you pair him with like Tristan Thompson or Larry Nance. And he's also going to be a guy that is, you know, capable on the defensive end, but doesn't get in the way of what Zion's best at, which is obviously him being a weak side shot blocker, rotating over the top. I think that you can work with that pairing pretty well and create a pretty functional two-way system around those two guys as your front court. And I think that that's important. I think that, you know, we worry a little bit about the logjam of what's going to happen with, you know, having Zion and Love and Thompson and Nance all together, and then you throw John Henson on and potentially David Nwaba on top of that. But like, the Love Zion pairing is the best of anything that you can put around him on this Cavs roster, and I don't think people are taking proper stock of just how good that pairing could potentially be.
I think you're right. I think it comes down to how much does Kevin Love want to play the five.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a thing that, you know, we didn't go well with LeBron. Is he going to be willing to put his body through that, considering the injuries he's had the last couple of years? I think that's a valid concern. I think a way to alleviate that is the Cavs have done things where, like, Love will guard centers, but they will also maybe not have him defend bulky centers. Maybe there's, like, a way you could, like, sneak Zion into some of those situations where, like, he could just guard the stronger guy so Love doesn't have to take some of the bruising. The other thing that I think could make that really interesting, it's something that Denver does with Jokic. They run really weird pick and rolls where, like, Jokic is being screened for by Jamal Murray, or, like, we saw Murray screen for Paul Millsap, or, you know, whatever. I would really, regardless of who they take, actually, I would like to see the Cavs try that with Kevin Love. I just want to see it and see what happens. But like a Zion Kevin Love pick and roll with Love being the ball handler and Zion being the roll man, or you could even do it vice versa with some pick and pop action so you could get Zion building that head of steam. I think there's just some really interesting things you could do with that. I think offensively it is great. I think the fit would be very modern. It'd be very interesting. It certainly, I think, would help Zion as well. I just wonder, I think the question there is, like, is Kevin Love willing to, like, basically play the five and make room for Zion? I think it's in the Cavs' interest to make it happen. I wonder what that looks like. I just don't really know.
Yeah, and I don't think this is something that you need to be, you know, relying on for them to do for 20 minutes a game right away. You know, this is going to be more than likely, like, you know, just kind of a situational, really effective pairing. I think that you're still going to probably be playing. You're honestly probably going to be playing Zion off the bench in his rookie year, and relying on two of whoever the current guys are, whoever you decide to keep. I think that Zion probably means that they are moving one of Larry Nance or Tristan Thompson this summer.
I would say Tristan Thompson is like the guy that if you want to look at someone getting moved, I think Tristan makes sense. I think Henson makes sense. If they do some kind of deal where they need to match salary or need to like sweeten the deal, I think flipping on to Zizic makes sense. I think Nance and Love would be the safer bets to be back, in my opinion.
Yeah, and those are the two of the three that fit best with Williamson too. That makes logical sense. But I mean, like, I think that you're going to have to configure ways for all three of these guys to each spend time together and also get some opportunities. You know, you're going to want to run small. You're going to want to run, you know, up tempo, particularly if you're really kind of leaning into Colin Sexton as a lead ball handler. And if you've got those two together and you can put, you know, some minutes of Zion at the five or some minutes where you're really trying to get out and run, that's probably in your best interest as well. So I think that that's a really good thing to keep in mind there is like it, that kind of is a point in this pairing's favor, is like, you are going to probably have to ask Kevin Love to play more five. You're not asking him to play as much five as he was playing with LeBron, though, I don't think.
Especially because Zion could like anchor like a bench unit as a five, and like you could do really interesting stuff, I think, to kind of make that work. Just before we move on to the other picks in this draft, and we'll get to actually, I think, talking a little bit about the Cavs' second pick in this draft as well. What do you make of the Sexton-Williamson fit?
I think it's really hard to figure out what that's going to look like, just because I am kind of in the camp where I really don't know what Colin Sexton's year two is going to look like.
It feels like that three-point shot, I think his three-point shot, what that actually is probably the key to all this.
Yeah, I mean, because if he's a guy that is going to be, you know, playing a little bit more off ball, is maybe kind of looking more like, you know, like December, January Sexton, where like he's not somebody that you can trust to run a ton of pick and roll, and he's not somebody that is going to be like a good transition point guard, then, you know, that gets a little clunky maybe, and you kind of have to work around that. But if he is looking like, you know, March, April, and he's continuing to advance, like that could be a really solid pairing, because like both of those guys are probably at your best if you're getting out and running a lot and making a lot of kind of rudimentary quick hitter decisions in your half court offense, trying to generate quick shots. I think that you can run a lot of simple pick and rolls with Zion and Sexton together. And even, you know, Zion in the dunker spot or something, off of like a Sexton Love pick and roll type of thing. I think that there's definitely ways that all could really gel together, but I think that it has a lot more to do with what Sexton looks like coming into next year than it does with what Zion is able to do.
So the Cavs are obviously in our scenario here getting the pick. The ESPN did a ranking of this fits for Zion earlier this week on their page. I'll link to that in the show notes. But for you, what are the Cavs rank in your personal interest in like where Zion is going to best fit in terms of what kind of team situations he might enter into?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I think that he's a guy that can be a beneficial player to every lottery team. I think that no matter who takes him, you're going to end up with, you know, positive value potentially to your long-term rebuild. I mean, even a team like Chicago that already has Lowry Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. together, like the Lowry-Zion pairing is phenomenal. Potentially. And I think that makes thing, you know, that a really, really interesting wrinkle. Atlanta is obviously really fascinating. Him and Trae Young playing together. You know, even Phoenix, which I have poo-pooed in the past, because like, you know, that doesn't feel like an organization that's going to use him correctly. I think that even that could be really interesting, because they do have a fair amount of shooters and that they could put around him, and they could really, you know, kind of experiment with what that's going to look like. And they already play TJ Warren in the type of role that Zion is probably going to play. So like, you know, that upgrade could be good in and of itself. So like, I would probably say that the Cavs are, you know, they're probably kind of middle of the pack in terms of the top 10 teams of who I would, you know, most like to see him on from like an aesthetic perspective, kind of around the league. But like, you know, I think that that's not an indictment on the Cavs that they're not like one of the top options. I think that just goes to show like how he is going to be kind of uniquely valuable to a wide variety of different teams in a variety of different contexts potentially.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I think Tuesday, once we find out who's going to pick, I think the analysis like of the team we expect to pick him, assuming like that team isn't like the Knicks and who will then like trade him for Anthony Davis or something like that, like I think that's going to be really, really, really interesting to kind of parse Especially because we like most of these, except for the Cavs and except for the Lakers and except for Memphis, all these teams have coaches and systems in place. So it's just, that's something to kind of keep in mind here as well. Okay, rest of the draft, lottery. This is the draft, Trevor, I would say, like, this is the let's screw teams over draft.
Mm-hmm.
Is like the way this worked out. So the order: Cavs 1, Pelicans 2, Mavs 3, Bulls 4, Knicks at 5, Suns 6, Hawks at 7, Wizards 8, Celtics via Memphis at 9, the T-Wolves at 10, Lakers 11, Hornets 12, Heat 13, the Celtics again at 14. Okay, so I did... You wrote up the first pick. We've talked a bunch about Zion, obviously. Number 2, I went Ja Morant at New Orleans. I just think, like, if you're in New Orleans, like, why not, I guess? I just feel like you bet on that. If you feel like he can draw some people in, for one, and also, like, you bet on him being a star, I think that just kind of is an interesting thing. And if you're looking at a veteran to pair with him, I think just Drew makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and Julius Randle does, too. I think that you can work with that setup. And, I mean, even if Drew Holiday's gone, even if Anthony Davis is gone, and you just have a team that's nothing and Ja Morant, that's a really good team context to kind of really get a good idea of what you have with Ja Morant, and also be bad enough that you can get Ja Morant help and maybe not rely on him as, like, the guy for your rebuild, which I think is all good things.
Yeah. So then we go to Dallas at 3. You went RJ Barrett. Why Barrett over Culver, and why Barrett? How do you think Barrett would fit with the Luka Kristaps Mavs?
Well, I just think that's an ideal setup for what Barrett's likely offensive outcome is going to be. You know, I've always kind of seen him as most ideal as, like, a secondary guy that's playing off of either another wing creator or a high volume point guard, just because, you know, that puts him in situations where he's going to be getting more attempts at the rim, kind of coming downhill off of against a bent defense. That's going to give him more opportunities to use his really, really solid ancillary passing and kind of open court passing. I think that the pairing with Luka is really interesting because suddenly there you've got another guy that can really bend the defense and creates a lot of outside options there. You've got all of their bigs can shoot, which is good. So you've got, you know, floor spacing that I think he'll be able to take advantage of. You've got a coach that is, you know, phenomenal at scheming with his team to be able to generate good offense. Those are all really good ways to put him in really solid situations. Even if he does kind of, you know, mimic a little bit of, you know, how they use Harrison Barnes offensively, like, I think that still is going to be an area where he's able to put in a lot of productive value. And when it comes down to it, having multiple wing creators is one of the surest ways to build a competitive team in the league nowadays. And having, you know, Barrett and Luka and kind of figuring everything else out, and you're basically just kind of tinkering around the edges at that point. So that's just a really solid fit, I think. And I like that fit a little bit better than Jarrett Culver, because, you know, then you have kind of, oh, we don't know if Luke is 100% like a good shooter yet or going to get there. We really don't know if Culver is going to have the same type of issue. We know pretty comfortably that Barrett's at least going to be a threat from mid-range consistently. So I think that that's just a better situation for Dallas to kind of build around, because it's going to be easier for them to build a good defense around those two guys than it would be to try to build a team that can shoot around those two guys, around him and Culver.
All right, so then we go to 4, Jarrett Culver to the Chicago Bulls. I did that pick just because I think I like the idea of him covering defensively for LaVine. I think I think point guard could make sense for them as well. I thought hard about Kobe White there. I just feel like Culver at 4, what he could do to help with LaVine, I think just kind of makes sense. Or would you have done something different than me in that slot?
I would have just because I don't think he's realistically a guy that the Bulls are going to target, because they aren't a team that values the type of things that Culver's good at. And also, you know, they're a team that would definitely look at Jarrett Culver and go, well, we have Otto Porter, so I don't know what Culver does that Porter doesn't already give us, which, you know, I think there's, like, I understand, but also is, you know, very ballsy. So like, I really think that that's a good fit for kind of what their roster is and what they need. Like, they wouldn't go wrong drafting Culver. I just don't think there's any way that they actually do that.
Yeah. All right. So let me go to five. You went Cam Reddish to the Knicks. I know you're not, look, you've been, hit hard on Twitter for some of your Reddish takes. People have been kind of grumpy with you about this. Why'd you go Reddish at five?
Because I try to be like, you know, I try to vary it up in these mock drafts, going between like what I think would be the best decision and also like what I think these teams are going to do. And the Knicks at five is a very dangerous specter for this draft, because if they miss out on Barrett, Morant, Zion, basically, if they miss out on those three, they're going to pick Reddish, Little, or Romeo Langford. Like, I'm fairly confident in that, because those are the name guys, and they don't really, like, you know, I just don't trust their scouting apparatus to be able to convince their front office that they shouldn't go with one of those guys. You know, this is the team that just last year took Kevin Knox 10 spots too early because he looked good against Miles Bridges in 3-on-3. Like, this is a pick that we've already heard rumors about, and it would be a disaster. Like, I'm not picking him because he's a good pick for the Knicks. I'm picking him because he's an incredibly Knicks pick.
Yeah, that all checks out. They're a team that gets screwed, I think, very easily by dropping to a spot like five. Okay, then we go to Phoenix at six. I just took I thought about Kobe White here. I just feel like Garland just feels like the type of dude I feel like Phoenix might just take. Even if, like, him and Okobo sort of, like, could overlap. And, like, him and Booker could be weird, but I just feel like that just seems like a Phoenix Suns type of pick.
Yeah, giving them two guys whose biggest knock are the fact that they can score, but they don't have any idea how to translate that scoring into useful useful team offense, that tracks pretty well. That would be interesting, especially because we truly, really don't know what Garland's going to look like as a pro point guard. But, you know, from what we've seen in high school and a little bit in college, like, he kind of has that same rap as Booker does and as Ayton does, honestly. So, yeah, very, very Sunsy. Like you can tell as we go through this, like, you can tell who the teams that are going to make mistakes in this draft are. And This is one of them. The Knicks are one of them. And that could end up making this draft pretty weird, because as we'll see in a couple picks, we're going to walk into some really good options here for some of the smarter teams.
By the way, I think that it's not off the table that the Cavs, we just don't know what the Cavs are going to fully view and value at. So they are a team that, like, maybe not to the degree that, like, the Knicks are, but, like, we need to see the Cavs do something smart before we, like, pencil or pen them in as, like, an actual smart team. Okay, seven, DeAndre Hunter. You wrote this up. I think you're right that they kind of get screwed about this, but I just think, like, he fits sort of what they're going to do. I think that it's a smart pick for them just value-wise at this spot. It's not, like, their ideal scenario. They obviously would probably like to get, you know, get Zion or get both picks, considering that in this scenario they lose the pick to Dallas, but I think, like, he just kind of makes sense for them at seven.
Yeah, I'm going to basically just parrot our friend Eustachio Raleigh and his buddies at Red Team Scouting with their what they like about Hunter, because what they like about Hunter is what I like about him in Atlanta, is he's the lineup versatility guy. And him on this team offers some really good lineup versatility options, because you can run small ball with Collins at center, Hunter at the four, Prince, Herter, and Young. You can lineups where Hunter is taking a majority of the 4 minutes, kind of, you know, working against more athletic fours that Collins is going to struggle with. You can put him in if you need like a really good shooting lineup next to Herter in like a 3-4 combo or a 2-3 combo. Like, he just offers a lot of different matchup problems for what that in a roster looks like moving forward, and kind of what their core is. Like, he just slides in really well with those guys. So, like, it's not a sexy pick. I would much rather have a lot of the guys that are already off the board, which is why I had such a hard time making this decision. But, you know, I can't argue with the idea of him just kind of giving them more tools in the toolbox to be able to throw at teams.
Yeah, I just don't see, like, any other guy that really, like, I would probably do there for them. Okay, so then we go to eight. The Wizards at eight. I went Brandon Clark. I just don't know what to make of what Washington should do. They're just, like, one of the teams that I feel like is in most in just in a bad place right now. But Clark just seems like a dude who at least, like, can be, like, an NBA player, and they just, like, need guys like that. I almost, like, went real weird in this when we were talking through this, and I was kind of getting your feedback on some of this. But I think it's just, like, they need actual NBA players, and Clark seems like he's probably going to be that.
Yeah, Washington's one of those teams that where, like, where they're probably going to pick is a bad spot for them. But if they end up with any of – they're, like, one of my favorite spots for any of the top guys. Like, I really like them as a RJ Barrett landing spot because it – for much of the same reason as Dallas. Like, you get him as a secondary creator. He's playing off Bradley Beal. You've got spacing. Like, it's a good setup there. You know, Zion Williamson is obviously a phenomenal fit with what their current roster entails. Brandon Clark is a really good fit for them as well. You know, they're really probably going to move forward with Thomas Bryant as their option at center here in the next couple of years because of how good he looked this year. And he's like an offense-focused stretch five. So you put him next to Clark, a guy that can protect the rim better than pretty much any he projects to be like one of the top rim protecting fours in the league, like as soon as like next year. So like putting him next to Bryant is a really, really interesting fit. You know, they know how to use those guys who can kind of create a little bit in the mid post off the experience with Markieff Morris. So they can have him do that in bench units. Like that's a pretty best case scenario for Washington. But yeah, they're one of the teams where I think that they are, it really behooves them to move up in this draft, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Then we go to Boston at nine. You went Coby White. I think this is like a really interesting pick for them at number nine. Why'd you go Coby White?
He's just a failsafe. I mean, the Boston's offseason is obviously going to hinge one on Anthony Davis, but two on what their point guard situation looks like going into 2019, because it could very easily be Marcus Smart as your guy. It could very easily be Terry Rozier on long-term money. It could be Kyrie Irving still. Who knows? But I think that they're going to need guard depth regardless, and they kind of lucked into a guy who fits a lot of what they want out of that point guard position, a guy who can add a little bit of flair and creativity, but it, for the most part, is just going to buckle down and do his job. And they have a roster full of those guys who have little quirks and little flair stuff, but for the most part are just going to do their job. So I think that it's a good culture fit for Coby White to go there. But I think that they're going to need a guard probably in this draft. And in this scenario where they have four picks, sorry, Memphis, that I think it behooves them to take a point guard in the top 10 because they're not going to find one otherwise. And it's a real position of need. That this point guard crop is not good. And the players that are good or the players that are there are either top 10 picks probably or second rounders. So like finding them a guy that can provide some value potentially, even if it's just bench value moving forward, like is a really solid setup.
Yeah, as we recorded this, like they just end had their season ended by Milwaukee. I just think they're fasting. And White would be, I think you're right, a good fit. Because Smart's not like a lead point guard. Like I like Marcus Smart. I think he's valuable. Just not as a lead guard.
Okay, then go ahead. He's a small two. Like yeah. He's always been a two.
Yeah. 100% what he is. And that he can be really valuable in that, but you just need to placate that in some way. All right, then we go to the Wolves at 10. I went Nazir Little here. I think just betting big on something, although him and Andrew Wiggins being on the same team feels potentially very funny, but that's where we're at with this.
Yeah, Minnesota got screwed here. Not having any of the point guards on the board and not having Brandon Clark really makes things difficult for them, because they're either making a very big reach or drafting one of the potential mistake guys on the wing. So that's not a good situation to be in.
Yeah, they're like, it's just tough looks for that new front office organization. Then we get to the Lakers at 11. What did you did this one? Talk me through this pick here.
Yeah, so the Lakers, it's going to be interesting to see what they do based on, you know, how their offseason has gone so far. It's very likely that they're going to just take whoever the biggest name is available. And right now that's probably Romeo Langford. But I kind of wanted to take a, like, what if they were smart approach and try to find like the best fit for what they need. And just getting them another ball handler who can be a shooter off ball and be a productive catch and shoot guy. Because they have exactly one of those players on their roster, and it's Kyle Kuzma. So that's exciting. Like putting another guy that can be that type of player on the roster and also offers a little bit of handling value, like, works really well. So I went with Nikhil Alexander-Walker from Virginia Tech. It's a little bit of a reach for him, but, you know, they just, like, they need ball handling and they need ball handling and shooting together. So I think that he's the best player on the board to be able to provide that. I think that Langford could end up being a better prospect, but, like, if you're just looking for a guy who's, like, likely to be a rotation player for this team in 3 years, that's Alexander Walker, much more likely than Langford.
If they were going to just pick here solely on, like, trade value, would Bol Bol be, like, the pick?
Yeah, potentially. I think it's probably Bol Bol or Langford. Like, one of those two guys is who they will take. I personally think they should take Grant Williams, but they'll never take him behind LeBron. But I think that Alexander Walker is like if I put RC Buford in the Lakers draft room, like, that's who I would take.
Yeah, that checks out. All right, then we get to 11, the Charlotte Hornets. I thought about Jackson Hayes when we did this last time. I just want Bol Bol to do something different. I just, like, feel like James Bragg comes from the Spurs. Maybe he can do something funky with a guy who has a funky NBA skill set. Will obviously take some time. They're in a weird spot as well. Another team that I think probably didn't benefit by some of the stuff we've done here. But picking at 12 isn't easy. I think that is generally a tough spot to be in. I think Jackson Hayes would make sense for them. It'd be a good value at 12. I just, for the sake of being able to write something different this week, that's kind of why I went with Bol Bol, for full transparency. But I think that could be an interesting spot for them if they want to get weird, or if they're afraid they're going to lose Kemba and need to, like, maybe bet big on hitting on someone at 12. And if it doesn't work out, they'll just get to pick in the top five in a couple years again anyway.
Yeah, I've said before, but, like, the area in this draft is 7 to 12 because, like, there's nobody who is worth the value of those picks. And in terms of, like, you know, that's where I would usually value, like, your home run swings, like a Lauri Markkanen, a guy who, like, you know, could fail but also could have some star potential. There aren't those guys in this draft, and the guys that are in that spot are going like 3, 4, 5. So this is a really hard spot to be in, and it's especially hard to be in if you're kind of like a totally aimless franchise like Charlotte is. Like what do they even need? Like, what functionally gets them better? I have no idea.
I generally don't. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
they're, like, we talk a lot about the treadmill of mediocrity. They are the mediocrity team. Like, they are the team that has, like, zero path forward, realistically, to, like, to being, like, an actual playoff team.
Yeah, it's not tough look for Michael Jordan. Okay, then we go to 13, Matthias Thybulle. This is a lot higher than I think most boards have him. But once we talked about it a little bit, I love him in Miami. Just feels like kind of perfect to some degree.
Yeah, I took PJ Washington for them last week, kind of for the same reason, where it's like you take a guy who has like wing skills and you give him to Eric Spoelstra, and Spoelstra is the best coach in the league and has the best coaching staff in the league for extracting value out of those guys. And when you couple that with the fact that this is the team that runs the most 2-3 zone in the league, and like it's like this is like this is a personal just like best merit in the draft. Like, this is the pick that is diametrically opposed to the Knicks taking Cam Reddish. It's the literal exact opposite pick.
Just, it feels like he would thrive in Miami. So, I, as much as I would like the Cavs to have a shot at getting him, which doesn't seem likely, I think he'd be good. All right, let me go to 13 or 14 for Boston and the lottery. I just went Sekou Doumbouya because I think just maybe they just bet big. I did also wanted to write something different than writing Jontae Porter, who I think kind of can make sense for them as well. Trevor, before we get out of here, we'll kind of recap on the way out. But the Cavs in this mock, it gets them Zion. How would that affect how you would approach their other pick at late in the first round?
It's really hard. I haven't fully fleshed this out.
It could be a crapshoot. That is the thing. Who's going to be there is like, a crapshoot.
I kind of really need the draft order before I really know what we're looking at 26, because like ways that the middle of this draft could break out. I mean, there could very easily be like multiple guys of the list that we just picked in our mock lottery that could be available like late in the first round. Like I could see what guys slipping or really vaulting up the board depending on what ends up happening. So it's really hard to project who's going to be available at that spot. But in terms of like what I would try to target, I think if you're taking Zion Williamson, I'm really shifting my gears towards like a shooting value and ball handling value wing player. So like I'm looking hard at guys like Brazdikas. I'm looking hard at guys like Terrence Davis of Ole Miss. I look at like Kaziak Powell of Stanford. Those would be the types of players that I'm looking for. Like a player that I can project to be like a wing that can provide some kind of offensive value as like an ancillary player, whether that's just being another ball handler that can take like secondary pick and rolls or being like a really competent off-ball shooter. Those would be the types of players that I'm looking at if we're landing Zion, because you absolutely do not need another big. There are no point guards, so I think that's the obvious spot there.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how this fixture. I can't wait for Tuesday. Trevor, for you as someone who like does this, this is what you do, is evaluate the draft and kind of flesh it out. Is just like getting this draft order the thing you've just like you've been waiting for this? Is this just like what does this help you a ton in a way?
It does, because like you realistically really get to flesh out like who is going to like go where in the top part of the draft, and situational fit is so for how these guys end up working out. I mean, a player like I preached about my philosophy with best player available. Like you have to pick the player that's the best player for what your team is going to be able to extract from that player, and really getting an idea of who the players are that are going to achieve, like have a realistic shot of achieving their ceiling based on where they're picked is really helpful. So like last year, you know, I did a draft board after draft where I went back and kind of factored team context into kind of re-ranking where guys fell on my board. And, you know, a player like Kevin Huerter from Maryland, who goes to the Hawks, like vaults up the board because he's a player that I really trust that they're going to be able to develop, because we've seen them work well with that type of player before. And then Kevin Knox, who is already low, is like out of the first round after he goes to the Knicks, because there's like zero shot that he develops into the type of player that he probably could become in another situation for New York. So like that
knowing where guys are going to go factors heavily in, because it really gives you a realistic look at what the ceiling outcome is going to be for that type of player.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating night. I think it's just there's so many teams that feel like they really need a good result here. And the new lottery odds, we're going to see if like they seem potentially as crazy as this Tankathon seems they might be. But you can find Trevor's work at The Step Back, After the Sword. Find him on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Trevor, as always, man, thanks so much.
Yep, and remember, somebody's gonna make it, and somebody's gonna get a really good result, but somebody's gonna get screwed, and that's gonna be honestly more exciting. Hopefully it isn't us.
Yeah, I will. My promise to the listeners out there is that I will tweet a Tottenham Hotspur related GIF that will indicate that the Cavs are either like it's just like eh, if it's screwed, or if they're like big winners. And if you can interpret that, that will like, you just got to interpret that. And then I'll talk about it, I'll write about it, but like my initial reaction will only be one GIF of Tottenham Hotspur. That's my promise to you. And if the Cavs have any luck, like Tottenham Hotspur, perhaps they'll get Zion, because Champions League final, motherfuckers. Talk to you next week. Cheers.